morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Leafs Devils tonight from Scotiabank Arena on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Devils just playing hockey for kicks.
Yeah.
Because what else are you going to do?
Well, I mean, you know, like if you had a milestone you could reach, but they don't have any of those.
No, they don't.
I mean, I'm sure there is some guy sitting on 19 goals who's like, but what about me? We don't care. Yeah, that's what about.
We certainly don't.
And guess what?
They don't really care either. No, they don't. And the Leafs are also like, as far as, you know, points that they can accumulate during the regular season, also kind of playing for kicks, although there is like technically things to play for, but I don't think that's priority number one for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's staying healthy and it's getting Auston Matthews to 70 goals. But did you know, and Damian Cox just mentioned this, he didn't have the exact numbers in front of him. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, Leafs have been like really good over the last couple of months. I have the numbers.
Yep.
But mostly because Damian Cox retweeted them and then I just pulled it off his feed. So whatever. Shut up.
So he did the work.
Of hitting retweet on somebody else's tweet.
Dug up the numbers for you.
All right. Oh, speaking of which, I have a gripe to pick with Sportsnet Stats. I sent them an email about that thing yesterday about how many times last year a pitcher started an inning after completing the previous one in 100 pitches.
Get lost?
Not even a response.
I love that. Good. No, honestly, good job, Sportsnet Stats. You got to keep this man in check.
Not even a, hey, man, that's like, do you really need that? Like, we have other things we need to pour our resources into.
Issues.
It was like, ghosted.
I don't know that this is definitively true, but I feel like the second baseball season starts, that department gets indefinitely busier.
Yeah, well, because there's, just statistics are more important in that sport than any other. Anyways, okay, now I guess I pose it to you, rest of the listening audience, to
do my work for me.
Because I don't know how to do it. I thought there was like a baseball reference thing that you have to subscribe to that you can do it. Anyways, what was I saying? You're the Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really good?
Yes.
Over the last 28 games. How about this? 27-1 over the last 28 games, leading the NHL in wins, points, and goals scored during that span. So not everything's going great
The start of that span was?
The Morgan Riley, Ridley Greig.
It was the game after that. Yeah.
Of course. Of course, because of course. Well, that also coincided with what the 7-game winning streak, right? Their longest winning streak of the season.
It's Morgan Riley, leader of men, galvanizing his team.
It's true. So not everything's going 100%. Like power play needs some work. Penalty kill has been better. Could be even better than it's been. I think goaltending's been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But are the Leafs not peaking at the exact right time right now?
Yeah, it feels like they are. I mean, peaking at the right time is always such a precarious thing because, I mean,
you're just afraid to say something that indicates that they're going to have postseason success because it feels like jinxing them.
Yeah, there is some element to that. But it's also like they could stop peaking at any given moment. Like the thing about peaking at the right time is the longer the peaking goes on for, the more likely it is about to immediately
fall off. It's about to end. Long a peak.
Hey, we anointed how many different definitive Stanley Cup champs have we had this year? Like the LA Kings were going to win the cup and then they fired their coach. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the LA Kings and the Leafs, slightly different animal, but yeah, I think that these hot streaks, it's great. You would never say you don't want to have it, but the longer it goes on, the more likely it is to stop anytime soon.
Yeah. That sounds like, typical
scaredy cat thinking.
Leaf
yeah.
fan behavior.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. This Insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Today's Insider is the Insider, Frank Saravelli, President of Hockey Content at DailyFaceoff.com. How's it going, Frank?
I am good. What's going on?
Are the Leafs peaking at the right time?
I think they are. 19-7-1 since the Ridley Greig empty net.
Mm-hmm.
Turning point of the season.
I mean, it seems clear, right?
Sometimes you just need a kick in the pants. Honestly, I'm not being funny. Like
in somebody else's head.
Hey, whatever it takes. It's only weird if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And what I would say is that's not a joke. That is, you can point to something in every season for a team that goes on a run. Last year for the Florida Panthers, it was when Keith Tkachuk called them soft on Toronto radio.
Wonder if he has any thoughts about this year's Leafs team he would like to share with them on Toronto radio.
Well, his kid doesn't play on this team, but yes. I mean, That's what made it even more unbelievable. That team lost its, and talk about peaking at the right time. That team lost its way into the playoffs.
Yeah, no.
Does it matter?
No, I mean, that's
the counter to the Leafs are peaking. They're playing too well. They should be playing horrible.
Well, this is the problem, is that this is the point I was making, Frank, is that you would never say, oh, you're playing too well heading into the playoffs. You want to be rolling. But no team goes on a streak like this that's 6 months long or 3 months long or 4 months long. There is definitely some element of I'm trying to protect myself.
The Boston
here.
Bruins did this last year. They won the entire season.
Mm-hmm. And then they peaked at the exact wrong time by switching their goalies back and forth, and Tyler Bertuzzi having 13 points, and it didn't matter. Didn't matter a lick. So, what do you think? How do you think?
So what I'm saying is,
okay, go ahead.
It doesn't matter what you do. Mm. There is something you
life
can
is
point to.
Staring
most
into the
of the
void.
Time it is. But what I would say is there's million examples to point to for both. You could cherry pick whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think the bigger storyline for the Leafs is the pressure is off.
Is it? The pressure is off. Interesting. So in what respect? Because I guess they won a round. They'll be underdogs against a team that went all the way to the cup final a season ago. Although it's not like the Panthers look like world beaters. So they're not peaking at the right time. In what way is the pressure off?
Because I think, at least what I see on social media, which isn't everything, and the tone I grasp and understand from conversing with you and others, is there's not really much expected of this team this year.
Maybe. I don't feel that way.
No, I think honestly what I think you've hit on, Frank, is that there is not the gurgling anticipation of last year. They load up at the deadline and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, they didn't trade away any first round picks for a Conn Smythe winner.
No, but because of that, I also think there's some element of having been through the rodeo so many times before. Having said that, I do think the sky will be falling if they drop game one of the series.
It's relative terms, right? Yeah, as far as this market, yeah, I guess the pressure is off, by which I mean it's only a complete nightmare and not riots in the street if they lose in the first round. Yeah.
I think you guys are way too hard.
What do you mean?
In the sense that who is realistically expecting this team to go on a run?
I don't think it's an unrealistic thing to think about.
No, but that's not what I'm asking. Who is saying this team this year has to win?
I mean, they have to. This group has to win at some point, and if not
some
this
point,
year,
that's you're changing the answer to you're changing the question.
Yeah, but if it's not the season in which player scores 70 goals,
no, that's not what I'm asking. Who is saying this team has to win this year?
No, I do understand what
management isn't saying. That.
I do understand what you're getting at a little bit, because I think with the fact that Matthews got locked up, there was the sea change at GM. I think there is a less of a last dance all in.
Not for Sheldon.
There's
Keefe.
Zero part of that. None of that exists.
Not for Sheldon Keefe though. Sheldon Keefe is we gotta win
story.
This year. We gotta win,
yeah.
Please.
That's why I stopped myself. I said management isn't saying that, and I was thinking, okay, well the coach is probably saying that, but that's because the coach is feeling it. But he gets worked up in church on Sundays, it feels like. So that's a whole separate side issue.
Well, I think the other thing, too, is the stakes of, and maybe this doesn't matter. I don't know how much this enters most people's thinking. It's entered a little bit of mine is, and you want team success for team success sake. You don't need another reason to have it. But the idea of stamping home this Austin Matthews season, whatever it ends up being, 66 goals, 68, 70, whatever the number ends up.
66. He's going to score again.
Stranger things have happened, and maybe it'd be good because he'd be saving some for the playoffs. Nah. But I think there is an element that a lot of people have of the kind of doomsday scenario of them bowing out in the first round in this historic season by a guy who's going to go down as the greatest player in franchise history is kind of all for naught. I think there's pressure on this season specifically, because I agree with a lot of what you're saying, that there is
from who, though? Is that honestly what people are saying? I haven't heard that once.
Well, I don't think anyone is saying it in the moment now, but I think that when we look back on the Matthews era, if somebody's bringing up the 70s goal season was so impressive, the comma to that will be, but they lost in the first round.
You're putting it on them before we even get there.
Well, okay.
I know that's what the job is sometimes, but what I'm saying is you still haven't given me or agreed with my premise yet, which is of all of the last 5 years, this one is the one with the least pressure. True or false?
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay. I would agree with that.
I think the bubble year against the Blue Jackets where they tried to sell off at the deadline, they're like, any takers for Tyson Barrie? And the league was like, no thanks. And they were losing to a Zamboni driver. I know it was the Blue Jackets. We viewed them as like some horrible team. They were, I think, tied on points with the Leafs going into that bubble 5-game series. That, to me, was the lowest expectations.
Oh, I don't know. Okay. So since they entered the cauldron, then I guess maybe we'll shorten the time frame.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
The pressure cooker has literally been a deep fryer the last 4 years, 3 years, whatever it is. My only point is it's not, the temperature isn't quite as hot as it was. And maybe that means nothing. Maybe it means something. But for me, when I watch this team in the playoffs, when the switch flips and all of a sudden the play goes to the next level, it feels like this team just clenches up. Mm. And they're going into whatever first round series they play, whoever they play, wherever it opens, as the underdog.
Mm. Yeah, they've been there before.
Not in the last few years.
I mean, yeah, they had home ice advantage. I mean, not 2 years ago, they didn't against the Lightning. Yeah, I guess. It's debatable.
They played better than they did last year. It's like, true. It's wacky.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
you could come up with a million things one way or the other. Maybe if the pressure's off, maybe it means nothing. All I'm saying is for a team that can play and for a team that, when I see and look at a lot of the different markers about trying to translate your game to playoff hockey, I'm actually quite bullish on the way this team has played in the second half of the season. And I think they've got an opportunity to surprise.
Well, I agree. And to me, it wouldn't be a surprise. And to me, the biggest differentiating factor is, like, you can talk about some of the principles and the core of this team maybe not having the best postseasons. Although it should be stated, like, Austin Matthews scored 5 goals in the 6-game series against the Lightning before, going goalless in the Panthers series. But a huge reason why they were able to win that series and their first in this iteration of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But it's the ancillary guys that they acquired, the Max Domis and the Tyler Bertuzzis. And Bertuzzi, it's a shorter track record in the postseason. That's pretty good, though, 10 points in 7 games a season ago. And Max Domi, he's been there before and also raised his game. And, that there is a belief. And Joel Edmondson, who we might see again tonight, there's some guys that have, and I guess you could have said the same thing about the Conn Smythe trophy winner that they got last year. But I do think that there's enough guys that they've acquired that have done that and raised their game in the postseason that there is a belief, by me at least, that this is going to be different. Like, I guess you're right about the pressure thing. But I really look at the flatness of talent in the Eastern Conference, especially, and say there's absolutely no reason why the Leafs can't go to the Stanley Cup Final this season.
I wouldn't say no reason. Think the big thing that stands out to me is the defense still, and I think
they're not a perfect hockey team.
Injecting truth serum, like, no one is looking at the Leafs defense and saying, "Yep, better than the Rangers, Carolina, Florida, or Boston." Mm-hmm. No one's saying that.
But who can score with them? And over the last 30 games, no one. They have the most goals in the National Hockey League. And what was the issue in the second round series against the Panthers? Couldn't score. Also got their heads caved in by physical play.
When I was talking about marker, that's what I'm looking at. Guess which team has the second most hits in the NHL since the All-Star break?
I assume it's going to be the Leafs.
Your Toronto Maple Leafs. Again, not hits, but hits aren't the answer, I guess, is what I'm saying. That's not the differentiator. No one's put together a game plan going into the playoffs and said, that's it. Hits. Yes. We need the guys upstairs to keep clicking the buttons in the press box. We need more hits. No one's saying that, but I look at raising your game, the physicality, how much way more physical playoff hockey is to compete in that environment. Like, if you're going to go toe-to-toe with Florida at some point, they're going to try and run you through the second row of the stadium.
Yeah, I don't like the sounds of that, but you're very right that that is going to happen. We saw it in spades in the series last year, and I'm with you. Like, I mean, one of the biggest pieces of found money in the league this year, let alone on this team, has been Simone Benoit, and that's been his claim to fame. It's been his hallmark on this team, is that he literally had a game where they gave him their, like, player of the game belt, and he said, I can't score a bleeping goal, but I'll hit the bodies for you guys. Like, he's very aware of what his job is. You know, we're talking about this team's chances, and, you know, we could talk about the defense or the goaltending, but just to bring it back to Austin Matthews for a sec, it is going to ride a lot on him. Has your opinion on the Hart kind of evolved or changed at all in the last couple weeks? I mean, we've done the thing where 70 seemed like a bit of a long shot, then maybe realistic, then a super long shot again, and now, I don't know, it's very much in the cards. If he gets there, does that change the way you look at MVP voting, or has the die already kind of largely been cast for you?
I would say, for the most part, it's not that the die has been cast. Like, I'm open to change in the sense of how I'm looking at my ballot, but Austin Matthews isn't very high on it, and he may not end up being in my top five.
I mean, that's insane. What are you talking about? Like, he might not win the Selke, but
he might be number five for me.
Why? Like, that makes no sense. I mean, primary points, 5-on-5 points. Again, like, okay, maybe not the best defensive forward in the NHL, but like,
you don't know my ballot, though.
Okay, so let's hear it. Four goalies and then Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole separate side argument about goalies, when we can have that at some point. But right now, I'm looking at something like an order subject to change. Nikita Kucherov, Nathan MacKinnon, Artemi Panarin, Connor McDavid, and then the fifth spot is up for grabs right now, and Austin Matthews would probably be number five.
Oh, my God. All right, so what's I understand the argument for the other, like, what's the, you're making an argument against Austin Matthews, and I'd love to hear it.
Against Austin Matthews,
yeah,
or, I mean, because, for the other players?
Nah, but you're making an argument against Austin Matthews, putting him fifth.
No, because that's, you, like, want me to make an argument against Austin Matthews?
No, you are. You're not saying, like, he's in the mix even. You're saying he's fifth. Like, that's different than saying somebody else deserves it, which I can understand. But when you say you're putting him fifth, you're making an argument against Austin Matthews.
But you're asking me if he gets to a round number of 70, that should he rock it up my list? That's what you asked me.
Now, Brent asked you that.
Yeah, that's this Rube over here. Let's pretend he sits at 66 and nothing changes.
What does the significance of getting four more goals or the number
matter?
Because he got to 60 a few years ago, a lot of people believe he won the Hart based on that specifically. And then last year, Connor McDavid had 64 and everyone shrugged.
Yeah. Here's what is
so now
the most
Matthews
significant.
Is 2 goals ahead of where Connor McDavid was last year. Yeah. And all of a sudden, every game, it's
You're
breathless.
Right.
Holy smokes, this is the most in the salary cap era. It's, I mean, more than McDavid scored last year. And what are we talking about?
We're talking about him being like 20 goals up on the second place finisher in the Rocket Trophy.
Okay, and I'm talking about Nikita Kucherov being 53 points clear of his next closest teammate.
So what? He's also like a couple of points up on a couple other guys. Like, yeah, like MacKinnon and McDavid are right there as far as the Art Ross is concerned. We're also talking
all about the Art Ross.
Like, no, it's not.
What's doing it for me.
No, it's not. And it's not all about, hey, 70 goals. It's not all about 80% of your points being primary points. It's not all about 80% of your points being 5-on-5 points. But it's like part of the discussion. It's not about being a top three finisher in the Selke. But like, you add all that up, you're talking about like, maybe Austin Matthews is the fifth place finisher on my Hart Trophy.
How do you know he's going to be a top three finisher for the Selke?
I mean, I'm saying that there's...
He finished 14th last year in the Selke.
Yeah, he's been a top 10 finisher, I believe, before as well.
He was 10th the year before that, 27th the year before that, and 16th the year before that.
Okay.
He didn't get votes for either of the 2 years, and then he was 38th.
Yeah, I can make the argument that he's... A winner, right? Because it's a two-way, it's an award for the best two-way forward. One of those ways is also offense, right? Like, you can't argue with the offense. You can't really argue with the defense, too. Even the nerd stats would tell you that he's been one of the best defensive forwards.
Be nice to them.
I am. I'm at times a nerd as well. But I don't know. Just the fifth thing.
Most of the time, he's a nerd.
Yeah. You can't say definitively.
I can't what?
You can't.
You're telling me because here, he gets
no,
to
no,
a
no,
certain
no.
number.
No, here's what I said. Let me finish. I said you can't definitively tell me that he's not going to win the Selke. You can have whatever opinion you
I
want.
I can't definitively tell you I'm not going to get hit by a bus later today. There's a million things I can't definitively tell you.
I'm saying that he's like in the Selke conversation, he's going to have 70 goals and blow everybody away as far as primary points and 5-on-5 points. Like, that's a pretty damn good argument.
I can tell you he's likely definitively going to win the Lady Bing Award.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's part of it. I'm looking at a guy that not just the nice round number of 70 might, by the end of 82 games, have the best, like a top five season in the history of the sport. To not be top five in Hart Trophy voting at the end of the year is kind of nuts to me. That's all. All right, we done? I want to get Coyote's thoughts from you as well.
I don't know what to say. Like, I think his year has been excellent. I'm not taking one thing away
Fifth
from him.
Best, maybe.
I think compared to those others, yeah, I do. Yeah.
All right, I disagree. But that's the beauty of sports. We can disagree.
Apparently not.
Well, what do you mean? What? Why? Why
oh, I'm just laughing. Like, you guys are making me out to be a moron.
No, I'm just...
What do you think his finish will be in the Hart race? Am I seeing this differently than everyone else?
No, I think you're seeing it pretty similarly, although I think
he's
more like...
Getting a little cute with Panarin, gotta be honest.
Yeah, fourth is like usually... That, but yeah, it's like the more I think about it, the more irked I'm getting at everybody. No, I don't think you... I think you're actually...
Dude, the Rangers might win the President's Trophy this year.
Good for them.
Go hang a banner. You're so proud of it.
They might win a President's Trophy this year... And Panarin is 40 points clear of his next closest teammate.
Yeah, that's good. He's having a good year. It's not Auston Matthews. It's, you know, best two-way forward in the whole league. He's going to score 70 goals. Seems good. Okay, you're all over this Coyotes thing. I'm still very trepidatious in saying this thing is done. You would know. Was there ever any other consideration other than Utah's as far as a relocation for that franchise?
Not to my knowledge.
So it's donezo. It's happening. If you had to,
it's
like,
it's not donezo. I mean, it's well down the track. It's substantially complete is what I would say. I believe that they are either close to agreeing to terms or have agreed to terms. And the biggest thing is that they have to go through the legal and paperwork process and then get signatures. And I think everyone is nervous about declaring anything definitively done until there's ink on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least DocuSign.
I'm certainly scared to bury them until it happens. Cause like Frankenstein's monster.
It's not burying them. They're on their way. Like the U-Haul trucks are backing up. Does this owner get cold feet, and is he the wildest of wild cards in the league? I think many people would say that's a strong possibility that he might win that award.
we're done.
He would be number one on my ballot.
Of that, yeah. There is zero debate.
Frank, I love a spirited debate. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
Have a good one, guys.
You too. Frank Zervelli, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I can't believe I'm the guy that's that heated about a Leafs topic.
You are pulling me to your side. I just, honestly, what it is I really should stop viewing sports this way, but I am who I am and I can't stop myself. It's like, I'm worried if I win that argument, they'll be like, okay, there you go. He got his heart. You'll never win anything again in your life. Like,
are
I just,
you serious?
I can't. I'm just like, good, forego the heart. I refuse to believe, I forget who we had on when we said this. I refuse to believe two good things would happen in the same year to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I just like forego the heart.
I know.
There's no way to live life. I know.
So the Selke, I think people forget too, right? It's like the best defensive forward. It's best two-way forward, right? Two-way. There's two ways.
Right. Yeah. You go on offense and on defense.
Better than the way that is as good as he is the other way.
Nobody. Nobody. I also, you've been doing the thing of Gretzky and Mario. I did look this up as well, in because I more wanted to see, because you're talking about the pressure, and obviously when you go to Leafs caps, or sorry, with the Leafs and pressure, you go back to the Ovechkin Capitals teams, and how did it feel for them? And I think there is an element of what Frank said, that every single year of the Ovechkin era, from the outside, from the inside, I guarantee you in Washington, alarm bells are ringing, and you got to find a way. This year is the only year. But from the outside, I don't think we all looked at it like it had to be the Capitals year. Every year. So I looked, I'm like, what did the Capitals do in that 65 goal season? Well, the thing that does change the math of it is that it was Ovechkin's second or third year. So that changes what is expected. He then had 9 points in a 7-game loss in that first round series. So nobody can sit here and quibble with it. And I don't think anybody's going to sit here quibbling with Auston Matthews at the end of this. But if the first round series looks like the Panthers won last year, it will be something that gets brought up as a bit of an asterisk or whatever. And I don't want to live in that world. And that's why I do think it is so important. I do think that adds a little bit of the impetus. It's the National Hockey League. You want to go win the cup every year if you have a team this good. But I do think it adds a little impetus to needing at least a modicum of team success so that it isn't thrown in your face as the asterisk on the 70 or whatever it ends up being goal season.
Was it his fault that the Leafs lost in 7 games and 1-2 to the Lightning, where he had 9 points, including 4 goals in the 7-game series?
Absolutely not. No.
And that was during the 60-goal season.
And that's why nobody talks about that with the 60-goal season, because they did it despite having lost. So I think that's kind of proof of concept right there.
We'll say none of those goals came in Game 7, and we're still waiting for the first goal in a Game 7?
I got a better idea.
What's that?
Don't play any.
Yeah, that's what they did last year.
Yeah, because we all know how that would have gone if it went to a Game 7.
Anyway.
And one other thing on the... I know we got Adam, but I wanted to... The idea of... Well, he has so many more points than his teammates... Do people realize that Auston Matthews and William Nylander don't play together?
Right.
Like, I think we do this thing, and Marner, if you do a per game, he's up there and there wouldn't be the gap. But remove William Nylander, because I don't know, when was the last time those guys played together? Was it November? Feels like it has been ages since those guys played together, in Matthews and Nylander. The next highest Leaf point getter is Marner with 79 points. And beyond that, I should probably mention, because people are going to do the extrapolation of, well, point per game Marner is much closer. He wasn't there.
Well,
so you can't say point per game Marner. He did this all without his primary assist man. So the I just want to give you one more log for your fire that you're
it's raging.
I know. And I'm like your kid. I'm like, I found this leaf in the woods. Can I put it here? And you're like, sure. Sure thing, bud. You're really helping.
Yeah.
But I think that is, if we're going to do the gap between Kucherov and his teammates and Panarin and his teammates, do it with Matthews and the guys he's played with for the bulk of this year. And Marner is a part of that.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it is a big old dearth between the points he has and what Bertuzzi has
also,
or what Domi has.
Like, you know, defensemen are part of the game too. Like Lightning, they have a Norris guy back there.
Yeah.
And hey, Morgan Riley's been suspended.
Imagine how much more Auston Matthews could cheat if he didn't have to be a Selke center. Oh, but the reason I brought up the Ovechkin thing at the very beginning of this, he was 30th in Selke votes the year he had 65 goals, which is hilarious.
That is funny.
It's like he has like two guys in Washington put him like 7th on their ballot.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's actually a war crime.
Yeah. Anyways, no. I tried
at the Hague for that.
Again, like, I mean, we're just in lockstep here, but yeah. I mean,
I agree.
Is... goals per 60 percentage has gone up since he's been separated from Mitch Marner. Like,
yeah, the team's best setup, man. Yeah.
All right. Anyways.
Although Max Domi, boy, can he fire a pass.
Yeah, he has done so. All right. When we come back, Adnan Verk, MLB Network, Cinephile Podcast. The Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Nothing gets me more fired up than when I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like I'm experiencing something, like I'm in a different plane of reality.
It's like, been like a habit for you the last like couple weeks.
The Davis Schneider thing, I was like, what am I?
Are you okay?
Am I missing something? And like the smart people kept coming on the radio and saying like, yeah, probably not. They're like, probably no good. And I was like, but
he hits the ball.
But like, been good throughout his minor league career. Has been good at the major leagues. Like at some point, don't you have to like explore the possibility of him being good? The Auston Matthews Hart Trophy thing, like it's now become my new hobby horse of like, oh, I just live in the upside down.
You're a jockey. You are smacking that hobby horse.
I just don't understand how a guy with a historic goal total being one of the best, if not the best defensive forward in the league is it's like fourth maybe in the Hart Trophy.
Can I pose this to you?
What?
Is it, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to get here, and maybe you've mentioned it and I just have missed it, but is this purely anti-Leaf bias?
I mean,
because often
you got to explore the possibility.
You have to squint to ask the question. Things.
As people have said, you got to at least ask the question.
You have to.
Let's ask the question of our next guest. Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ben. Brent, a pleasure with you guys, as always. Yeah, I think there is a little bit of anti-Leaf bias. I think when you look at, you know, the major sports leagues, generally you love them or hate them, whether it's the Cowboys, the Lakers, the Celtics, the Leafs, or the Habs. I mean, I think sometimes that people often look, to me, it's like coach of the year. You never actually give it to the best coach. Mm. It's the coach who took the roster, which was supposed to be the most underwhelming, and somehow took them the number seven seed. Right? Like, it always should be the better guy, but, like, it never happens that way. So, similarly, Matthews is a known quantity. He's known to be an elite goal scorer. He has been for some time. And so you just start to, you know, you kind of wander around the shop looking for the other shiny new toy. And when you see yourself, no, it really just should be him. Like, why are we making this more difficult than it should be? And as you guys said, there's other guys having tremendous seasons. Of course, McDavid is the best player in the world. Doesn't mean he should win the Hart Trophy. Obviously, McKinnon's having a great year. Kucherov, Pastrnak. But I'm like, for Matthews to not be a finalist is shocking, if that is the case. But I'm with you guys. It could be a chance. I remember doing NHL Network a month ago, and I remember talking to one of the analysts off the top of my head. It might have been Dave Reed, actually. So it wasn't like somebody who isn't familiar with Toronto. And he was like, I got Matthews fourth right now. I'm like, what? Like, how is he not top three? He's scored 70 goals. It hasn't happened in 35 years, whatever. It's been 92, 93. So I do think it's a little bit of that anti-Leaf bias overall.
Yeah, we just talked to a guy who was saying maybe even fifth on his ballot. So, yeah, it is remarkable. I'm trying to think, and maybe I'm misremembering, to borrow a baseball phrase, maybe I'm misremembering what happened. But I don't feel like we do this with Ohtani where we go, all right, like he's the guy. But let's squint and contort ourselves in 15 other ways to give somebody else the MVP. Like, it doesn't feel like we do that. And again, like, both of you, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe that happened more with Trout, where he was like the de facto Trout guy, and you guy. Start from other places. But that I'm not saying it's just a hockey thing, but boy, it does not feel like a baseball thing.
No, I think it goes into all sports, and that's generally that bias that just exists, you know, again, for those major markets, you know. And sometimes it's weird, like it goes to your benefit sometimes. Like with the Bruins, I feel like there's like this pro Pastrnak contingent, because it's like, wow, the Bruins have been great for so long, and he's a great player. It's an original six market. What a great. And I'm like, wait, hang on a second. But you can see all those things about Toronto. Why is it anti-Toronto but pro-Boston? So maybe it's an anti-Canada thing sometimes too. It's weird. But bottom line is, anyone who's doing something historic, which hasn't been done in a few decades, it's got to be top three. Nothing has to win. Has to be top three.
Yeah. No question about it. I mean, do you have any opinion? You can even take it outside of the sports realm where you're like, it's such a minority opinion, and like, it's so discounted, your opinion. You're like, am I taking crazy pills? Like, I assume you have some movie that you either like or dislike that nobody likes, that you're just like, what's happening here?
Well, it's funny. The one for years, Ben, was, of course, Forrest Gump. But there's enough of a contingent of anti-Forrest Gump people.
For sure.
So much so that in The Big Sick, there's this great scene with Ray Romano talks to Kumail Nanjiani. And Ray Romano says, well, I never go on the internet. That's where you find all these people that don't like Forrest Gump. What's wrong with these people? So there's, even at the time, there was like a maybe a 10% going, hey, man, Paul Fix is pretty great. Shawshank Redemption is pretty great. And then over time, that became a tidal wave. I'll give you one which is very unpopular, which nobody has backed me up on, is I wasn't crazy about Ozark. That's been a universally lauded show. And my wife and I watched it during the pandemic, and I said it was like a watered-down Breaking Bad. Like, it was, you know, a bunch of guys here in the country. And listen, I love Bateman. I love Arrested Development. And I get what he was doing. He's a talented director, in addition to being an actor playing against type. But I'm like, my wife was like literally predicting every plot twist as it was happening. Like, oh, this is going to happen next. This is going to happen next. Garner wins all the Emmys, right, for supporting actress. To me, it's a very tired character. After a while, she just looks like angry, profane, loudmouth. Like, okay, I got it. I'm the one guy in the world that's not crazy about Ozark.
Okay, I can't speak to Ozark. I've never seen it. But here's the one for me when it comes to movies. And I love Greta Gerwig. I have more time for the Barbie movie than you did. I didn't get Lady Bird. I didn't get Lady Bird at all. And maybe I just thought it would be funnier. But I was like, oh, yeah, like, things happened. It wasn't that interesting. I feel like I'm the only person that didn't get Lady Bird. Like, I'm not, like, ardently against it. I was like, but that just, I was like, I looked at the trailer. I was like, oh, this is going to be a funny movie. It's like, this is not funny.
It seems like a you, like, problem.
Not very surprising. Yeah. Like, I didn't get Lady Bird at all. And I feel like that's such an out there opinion that, like, you're going to think differently of me now.
And I won't go to that extent, because I will say it's probably a movie more guarded towards women than men, particularly, you know, mother-daughter type relationships. But I got to be honest, I'm surprised by your reaction, because I genuinely liked it. And I went in with a jaded eye thinking, well, why? What am I going to be appealing to this story? But, you know, mother-daughter, it's not kind of my jam. And I loved it. I mean, I'll say this in fairness to you. I've never seen it a second time. It's not a movie that I want to crank up on a DVD player for a rewatch. But I watched it once. I thought it was terrific. And I was particularly moved. That scene where Laurie Metcalf drops her off at the airport, starts driving away, and she starts fighting back emotion, then goes back, and Tracy Letts has to hug her. Her husband says, she's gone. She's gone. Like, I was emotionally worked up by that scene. And this is well before any of my kids have gone to college yet. And I thought, actually, Metcalf should have won the Oscar that year for supporting actress. It ended up being an actress I also love, Allison Janney, who was hysterical in I, Tonya. She just wasn't in the movie very much. I, Tonya, she's in it maybe, I want to say, 20 minutes tops. But I thought Metcalf was great in Lady Bird. So I wish I could back you up, buddy. Sorry.
No, I liked Lady Bird, buddy. And I don't even...
saw Lady Bird?
I know. That would surprise you in and of itself. I feel like it hit me at a very particular time where I guess I just had a lot of sitting around to do.
Timothy Chalamet, like his coming out party too.
Yeah.
No, even I enjoyed it. But as you say, it's like a movie more geared toward like mothers and daughters. It's like I grew up living with my mom and my sister. And so it's like, I watched those fights firsthand. So, yeah, it like didn't resonate with me, but it was like I was wincing a lot during it. I think is probably my recollection of it. So, yeah, I don't have like a movie. I guess if I had like a TV movie one, go more TV than movie. It's The Bear for me. I just like I tried it. I tried to get into
it. I'm kind of with you on The Bear, too.
But I was going to say I don't feel like that counts because I feel like there's enough of us that are going, it's okay. Okay.
Where are you on The Bear?
No, I love that you guys said that because I watched, I don't know if I got to the first episode, maybe even just the first 10 minutes. And my wife was already on her phone. The whole point was to watch it together. And I said, if you're not feeling this, forget it. And I haven't gone back to it. And it wins everything, right? It wins every Emmy. And I was at the Critics' Choice Awards, as you guys know, in January. And I said, having a smoke was Jeremy Allen White. And I went up to him. And I was like, hey, man, sorry to bug you. I've got to be honest. I don't watch The Bear, but I love Iron Claw.
You didn't have to say the first part. You could have just said, I like Iron Claw.
Not a fan of MLB Network and NHL Network, but Adnan, nice to meet you, obviously. And also, when is that guy not having a smoke? Yeah. I feel like he lives having a smoke.
Yeah,
is he allowed indoors in North America anymore? Is he like an animal that is just like chained to a fence somewhere?
I quickly figured out, if you want to run into celebrities, either you loiter outside the bathroom, which is where I met Paul Giamatti and John Hamm, or you go to the smoking area, where I saw Jeremy Allen White once an hour every hour. So my man was sitting there.
I love that. Yeah. No, I haven't seen Iron Claw, but yes, I've heard great things. I'm sure I would love that one. All right. Let's talk Blue Jays. Why don't we? I said off the top of the show, with the last turn through the rotation, the top three guys outside of Kevin Gausman, who will go tomorrow in the first game of this Rockies series, and they've all been so good that I'm not afraid of the pitching regression monster anymore. That was part of the reason not to believe in the Blue Jays this season. I mean, the prime reason, and still one that I am afraid of, is that the offense won't be good enough because it wasn't good enough last year, and it's seemingly worse on paper this year. But the other one was like, well, look how healthy and good the rotation was last year. It can't be that again. I think it can be. Where are you on that?
I do really like the rotation, and I was so surprised how Gausman got lit up against the Yankees, because going in, His numbers have been phenomenal against New York, something like a 1.17 ERA in 7 starts. So it just happened to be a bad performance. We know he's not 100% yet. You know, give a few home runs, it happens. But generally, this Jays rotation, I start with Gosman. I think he's elite, incredible splitter. He's a guy who has Cy Young stuff and should always be in that conversation. Takes the ball deep, ton of strikeouts, everything that you want. I think Berríos has found it. You know, when they made that trade, I remember talking to Alex Cora because he's tight with Berríos, you know, obviously playing for Puerto Rico, WBC. Alex managed him. He goes, dude, this guy's an absolute stud. Then he had that situation, you know, they signed him a big deal. Then he stunk it up. You're like, oh my God, what were the Jays thinking? And then last year he got his mojo back. I'm like, oh, this guy's 1A, 1B. I think he's phenomenal. And it's clearly this season he's off to a great start. You know, after that, I think Bassett, it's been a little bit up and down, but again, he's a guy that goes 200 innings. He'll pitch. Again, I look at durability. With this plague, with this epidemic of injuries right now, seemingly every team, right, their ace has gone down. I look at a guy like Bassett and go, wait, you're like one of 5 pitchers that actually throws 200 innings? That is incredible value to me as far as resting my bullpen. I don't care if you have a 4 ERA, which he doesn't, but I'm like, you're able to help me in so many ways because you can go deep. Kikuchi, you know, I think he's better than most expected a season ago, and I don't think there's any reason not to expect him to be a solid number 4 starter. And for like anybody questioning a number 5 starter, you go, dude, come on. That's like looking at a starting 5 of the NBA. Go, you're a little weak at the small forward position. I'm like, yeah, but if I have a dominant center and a point guard, then I think we're going to figure this out. So similarly, you know, whether Manoah is the answer, Yariel Rodriguez at some point, you know, Bowden Francis, I know has pitched a couple stars. Don't figure that part out. To me, that's not a major concern. But, yeah, I feel very good about the starting rotation. Somebody who says, well, there has to be a natural regression, I'd say, well, why? Okay, maybe every 5th day. The 5th starter is not going to be great, but I feel pretty good about 4 or 5 starters, and that's better than a lot of other teams can feel like. You could make a case not only the best rotation in the American League East, but up there in the AL. Like, the Mariners are always pretty fearsome to me because of their depth with Castillo and Kirby and Logan Gilbert, but that Jays rotation I have no qualms with. The offense is where I get very concerned.
Yeah, I am a little concerned about a slight step back from Bassett, but I don't think it'll be a step back where it's, you know, he's 10% worse every start. I just think he'll have the odd day where he's not kind of there. And for a guy who is your 3rd or 4th starter, I think that you can totally kind of work to overcome that. You mentioned the pitching injuries there. I don't know if you have a thought on it. I mean, Ben and I were kind of bandying around the thought of you can never put the toothpaste back in the tube. But, you know, there used to be the thought of you'd start a game working at 93. Well, I mean, back then it was like 93, 94, and you'd work yourself up. Maybe you'd save 96 for the spot you really needed. That just doesn't happen anymore. You're getting max effort all the time, other than if it's a, you know, a Chris Bassett type. Do you think there's any way to change the way pitching is in baseball now? Because, yeah, you can sit there and tell one particular player, hey, for the longevity of yourself or to give your team 200 innings, it's better to go at 90% all the time than 110. But if a guy needs 110 in that exact moment or he feels like it, he's going to do it. Like, it just seems like it's such a hard kind of balance to walk, and you need more Chris Bassett to the world. But I like watching Spencer Striders too, so I don't want to get rid of that. It seems like quite the conundrum for baseball.
Yeah, fellow Canadian Ryan Dempster did a great breakdown with me and Sean Casey the other day on MLB Tonight and spoke extensively about it. And he said, it really comes down to this. In baseball, the greatest weapon is a well-located fastball. And Greg Maddux would teach him this, would tell him, you know, that fastball down and away to a right-handed hitter, he grounds out, rolls over to shortstop, boom. Like, you do that every time, and you're good. If you locate your fastball, that's fine. Mm-hmm. What has happened, though, in the sport, though, is everyone is obsessed with spin rates and velo. So it's not just throw hard, throw 97. It's throw it with a lot of break. And he's like, you know, Ryan started showing me, he's like, if you just throw a two-seamer, you guys grab a baseball, obviously you run your fingers along the seams, or a four-seamer against it. You don't feel any stress when you throw it. But if you start to throw break, sliders, cutters, sweepers, you start to feel a little bit of tension in your elbow. And again, you're throwing it at max speed. And I thought Justin Verlander's comments were very smart the other day as well, in the way that the game has changed. You know, he's like, Verlander's a perfect example of a guy. If you watch him, first couple innings, he's 92, 93.
Yes.
And when he really needs that giddy up in the 6th, Verlander throws 97, 98. So he's not going max effort all the time. But the way these guys are being taught, the way the front office feels, like, no, just go get it. Like, get out there and throw as hard as you can, as quick as you can, and that's it. And if you can just give us 4 innings of max effort, it's 100 pitches, whatever. We'll just get another guy and go to the bullpen. It's far gone from that idea of starters playing deep in games, and that's what's caused this preponderance of injuries. And the only way really to solve it is going to take time. It's going to take literally a generation because it's being taught at all levels. Maybe not Little League, but it's being taught like high schools, colleges. It's velo plus spin rate. So not only throw it as hard as you can, but throw it with as much break as possible. Look at those RPMs from 2,700, 2,900, et cetera. So I look at a guy like Lance McCullers, who's a really good pitcher, but like hasn't been the same since like 2019. And I looked, I'm like, half of his pitches are breaking balls. Like every time you're putting, you throw a curveball, every time you throw those pitches, it causes a lot of stress in your elbow. And it's pretty depressing when you see how many injuries it's been. Like, normally you get one or two, right? But I'm like, when you say Gerrit Cole, the best case has been he's only gone for 2 months. When I say to you Spencer Strider and Yuri Perez and maybe Framber Valdez and Shane Bieber, like it's a lot, man. It's tough.
Yeah, I mean, we should just study Jose Barrios, whatever he's doing, because he's never spent a second on the injured list his entire career. So, I don't know, just like get him in the lab, do whatever he's doing, because it's worked, and to the benefit of the Blue Jays. Adnan, buddy, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much, Ben. Brent, we'll talk soon, fellas. Take care.
All right, you too. Adnan Berg, MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast. That's, yeah. Oh, we didn't get to the Ohtani thing, but yeah, he's... Is it, the interpreter is going to the clink, it seems.
Yes.
It looks like he's going
willingly
to plead guilty, and Ohtani is testified under oath. But Ipe Mizuhara apparently changed. There is a report that he changed Ohtani's bank account so that he would not receive alerts and confirmations about transactions. It might be north of $4.5 million that he stole as well.
I would not be like overly happy about that if I was Shohei. Just going to say that.
Yeah, it seems like he was on the up and up, and the story that he told is the truth. Unless, wow, some guy's really willing to go away for, I mean, not an insignificant amount of time,
no.
I think.
I'm not going to pretend to know, but let me tell you.
Sometime. He's going to go away for some time.
One day in jail is more than I'd be willing to do for something I didn't do. Mm-hmm. So, there you go.
All right, so here's the good news. Masters is going to start.
I know you hate it when you scream before the mic comes on. Yeah, but I have to deal with that. So
I know. It's like kind of
go,
and that's,
I don't
like know, it's the like muted a version. Stretch. It's a stretch.
A vocal stretch?
Well, I stretch my whole body and a primal scream that, I don't know, exercises the demons that live within me.
Boy, they're in there. I know.
10:30 is when the opening round is going to start, which is honestly, if I'm looking at one guy, it's good news for it. Like Tiger is not having to play like 36 holes in like a second and a half is good news for him.
Ooh, I disagree. He's going to have to jam in a whole bunch more golf tomorrow. He's going to have to like stop and start the
tomorrow. You don't think they can get it all in starting at 10:30?
Not with Tiger, with how late he's going to be out there. And I don't think they'll.
At his time,
he's at like 1:30 or something like that. That was the initial time. So we'll see what that gets
dark
back
until
to
7 o'clock. Like when?
I think there'll be, and I'm just going off of what like people on the ground are saying. It seems like it'll be a bit of a trouble to get it all in today from Tiger's perspective. If that's the case, that's going to be bad, having to have him play more than 18 holes in a day when he's played like 72 holes in like the year. It's going to be a problem.
Shout out to Ricky Fowler, who won the par 3 tournament.
Did you see his face when he did it?
No.
He looked, because he went out and posted like a 4 under, and you figure somebody's going to do, and they just did him standing there watching.
Oh, no. As like every guy hands their putter to their wife or whatever to just qualify himself, and him holding it is perfect, actually. Like, he should win it every year. He really should. It was just is perfect. It was the world's most on brand winner of anything. Like, forget winner of the par 3 contest. Just like Austin Matthews is going to win the Rocket. That'll be less on brand than Ricky Fowler winning the par 3.
Does it change things if you get a lifetime exemption to the par 3 tournament if you win it?
For me,
you get
yes.
to go, no, I, for the players, I wonder. Like, at least you get on the grounds?
I would feel that way, but I have a feeling Ricky Fowler would like to think. I mean, he's wrong, but he'd like to think he could win the Masters one day. Again, he's wrong.
Yeah.
I'll take his action. If he's betting on himself, Pete Rose style, I will take that bet. He would never, of course, obviously.
As far as we know.
In today's day and age and climate, we would never make that joke.
All right.
But I just did. Happy Masters Thursday.
Yes. To you as well.
Mm.
We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 Fan.
Good morning. I love golf. I do. I've always loved it.